This is a CBC podcast. Discover the CBC programs of yesteryear, like Man Alive and Life and Times, with the CBC Digital Archives. Watch, hear, and collect your favorite clips at cbc.ca/archives.
Hi, I'm Matt Galloway. This is the Metro Morning Podcast for Tuesday. Coming up, we'll hear about the future of the TTC from the new chair of the TTC as well. Speed dating. Yes, you know what that is. How about speed mentoring? We'll meet two people who will be mentoring each other and learning from each other coming up in just a few moments' time. First, though, to pick up on a story we brought you yesterday. Yesterday on Metro Morning, Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair was here to discuss a recent probe into police action during the G20 summit. While the Special Investigations Unit decided not to proceed with criminal charges, it also found that excessive force was likely used during the arrest of Adam Nobody. He's a 27-year-old who was protesting near Queen's Park. Yesterday, the police chief criticized the SIU's conclusion and questioned the legitimacy of a YouTube video that documents the arrest. Here's part of what Chief Blair had to say yesterday on Metro Morning.
The evidence that they're relying on is false. It's been edited. There's a significant portion of it has been removed. And I think that portion, I think, removes any opportunity for a reasonable explanation of the force that was used. And frankly, I would have expected more.
That's Chief Bill Blair speaking yesterday on Metro Morning. Julian Falconer is the lawyer for Adam Nobody. Today, he's calling for the SIU to reopen that investigation. Julian Falconer is with me in studio now. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your reaction to what Chief Blair had to say, that this video at the heart of this investigation has been doctored?
Well, certainly it was with some dismay that I heard the chief's words yesterday on behalf of my client, Adam. And it's with some dismay in the sense that I immediately asked my people in our office to track down the author of the YouTube video, a YouTube video which was submitted to the SIU by our office. And that individual, a full-time bank employee of a chartered bank, came into our office yesterday. He swore an affidavit yesterday as to the circumstances around the creation of the video. He's never been in trouble with the police. He's got no record. And he swore the affidavit as to the origins of the video. We've provided that affidavit to the SIU. We've provided the photos historically of the injuries. These people, whether it's the member of the public who took the video or Adam Nobody who was severely beaten, these people have come forward. The odd contrast, of course, is that the police officers mm-hmm. won't come forward. And now we have a chief of police talking about fabricating evidence. And simply, it's disconcerting and puzzling.
I want to get to the issue of the police not coming forward in just a moment. And that was a large part of our conversation yesterday with Chief Blair. But what about the video? I guess the doctoring, and I say this in quotation marks, that is alleged to have happened is an excerpt from the video that is not shown, that there's a break in the video. What is the man who shot the video, who's come forward, say happened during that break?
Well, Mr. Bridge came into our office yesterday. I'm not in any way, we're being entirely transparent about it. Advises that for 5 seconds he turned it off as he was backing away from the police coming at the crowd. He turned off he had a standard point-and-shoot camera that he was using in video function. He turned it off for 5 seconds and turned it back on. That's the sum total of describing the break. Nothing was removed from the video. The raw footage, so there's two clips of raw footage, has been actually submitted both to the SIU and now to CBC last night, because Mr. Nobody has nothing to hide, and the person who took the video, a member of the public who's never met Mr. Nobody, has nothing to hide. I mean, the irony here, of course, is the converse or corollary isn't true. We are dealing with an arrest record where the badge number of the police officer was falsified. They can't track down who the officer who laid the beating on Adam is because the badge numbers were falsified. I mean, this case screams out for not attacks on members of the public, as was engaged in by the chief, but for the chief, in circumstances of good G20 policing, to identify the bad policing and do something about it.
The suggestion is during that 5 seconds, that would explain why the police acted in the way they did against Mr. Nobody.
Well, you know, I've encouraged Chief Blair through the letter we wrote to Mr. Scott yesterday, if he has information. We've asked the SIU to reopen the investigation based on allegations of obstruct justice by the chief, because that's what he said yesterday. He used words like tampering, fabrication. He suggested there was doctoring. So with all of this, we've asked him to submit that to the director of SIU. Time will tell. But what's important here is to understand that the author of the video has done an affidavit yesterday sworn. He swore to not only that the video is untouched, but he also swore to what he saw. And he saw uninterrupted Mr. Nobody chased down by the police as depicted in the YouTube video. He points out that he saw no weapon in Adam's hands. He saw a Bristol board and a camera in Adam's hands.
Now, that's important because the chief yesterday felt the police were arresting, and these are his words, a violent armed offender.
You know, it's a very interesting approach to take swings at members of the public who have been seriously injured. It's an interesting approach to take swings at authors of video. I sure hope the chief of police, having taken these very, made these very serious allegations, has something to back them up.
Was your client armed?
Absolutely not. And by the way, he was charged with assault police, and that charge was withdrawn after the Crown, and I have the transcript, put on the record that there was actually no evidence that this individual assaulted the police officer identified. And number two, there was never a charge suggesting he had a weapon. So what's kind of puzzling about this is the chief's reaction yesterday came as such a surprise to those of us familiar with the case that I went back and literally looked at every piece of information we had affidavits sworn yesterday. They're all coming forward. The members of the public are coming forward. I sure hope the chief of police uses the same standard for his police officers.
This is something that we spoke with the chief about yesterday, and that's in part one of the problems with this investigation, is that there are some officers who could identify the other officers that are alleged to have used excessive force, but those officers aren't speaking up. How troubled are you by that?
Well, at the end of the day, like anyone else, especially defense counsel, I respect the constitutional right to remain silent. Officers may well have chosen to exercise that right. The odd thing about this case is it runs far deeper than that, because it's not about identifiable officers exercising the right to remain silent. Officers are refusing to come forward to own up to their actions on the video. So it's not a case of Chief Blair has reports from these officers and is confident about what happened. The opposite is true. He does not know because his officers won't identify himself. Notwithstanding that absence of knowledge, he made claims yesterday about dangerous offenders with weapons. You know, we have asked the SIU to reopen the investigation, and we are calling through written correspondence on Chief Blair to submit this information, because what he's doing is essentially engaging in a smear campaign on upstanding members of the public. This guy's a bank employee for the last few years. He has no criminal record. He doesn't know my client. And yet he is suggesting that this individual engaged in evidence tampering, or he's suggesting our office has. So the obvious answer for us is to say we have no secrets, which we don't, provide our information to the Special Investigations Unit. The raw footage of the videos has also been provided to CBC. We encourage people to look at this, but at the same time, it's very important that the police apply that same standard to themselves. And what I have to ask is, why engage in this kind of smear campaign? There was good G20 policing. There were lots of examples of officers doing their jobs, but there's some bad policing. Surely all of us, including the good police officers, would like to distance ourselves from the bad policing.
Julian Falconer, thank you.
Pleasure.
Julian Falconer is a Toronto lawyer. He's representing Adam Nobody, a 27-year-old arrested during the G20 summit. He was talking about new information surrounding a video of Mr. Nobody's arrest. Yesterday, Mayor-elect Rob Ford announced his key posts for City Hall, the people who will help shape the city in the future. Among those named, Karen Stintz. She'll be taking the wheel of the TTC, should the commission agree. We spoke this morning about her new portfolio, a challenging one with no shortage of controversies, including what to do with David Miller's Transit City. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You said yesterday that there are things that can be accomplished in the TTC in the very short term, and that's
yes.
What people are looking for, is improvement quickly. What are those things?
Well, I expect in the very short term we're going to see a new focus on customer service, and there'll be a number of customer service initiatives that will roll out, and I think the public will be pleased.
That's an important step, but it's also a bit of a woolly term. People don't know what customer service means. So from your definition, what is customer service when it comes to the TTC?
From my perspective, I think we need to see a cleaner system, a reliable system, one that the public chooses to use. And we're going to have to, in the medium term, we're going to have to modernize the fare payment technology. I think people are tired of wrestling for tokens and tickets, and so that we will be looking to implement in the medium term.
And does that mean the Presto system that other transit systems around the GTA have already adopted and that the TTC was moving away from, that we were moving towards this this open fare system? Are you going to adopt the Presto system?
Well, as I understand it, there is a contract that's gone out. The results are coming back to the commission in January, and we want to evaluate that and make the decision that's best for the rider.
What does that mean?
So we want to make sure that we have a transit system that's portable, that's easy to use, that works for the rider's needs, and that is making sense, really, for the system, for the rider.
Can you have better customer service under the larger framework that this government is going to be moving towards? And that's a belt-tightening sort of approach. The fact that we do need to cut back on some frills that we're paring back to, as some people say, the essentials. Can you increase customer service knowing that there's going to be less money out there?
Absolutely. I think customer service is a mindset, and it's a way that we do business. And I think we need to bring that to the TTC. Already, we've seen the management take steps to implement the report that the customer service panel wrote for them. Mm-hmm. And moving towards more visibility on the platforms, moving towards station managers, reallocating resources. These aren't things that cost a lot of money. These are just things we need to make a commitment to.
And things that you can accelerate, do you think?
Yeah, I think we do need to accelerate and make a decision on the kind of modern fare technology that we're going to implement. I think that decision has been delayed over the last number of years, and I think we need to make a decision on it and move forward.
One of the things that Rob Ford campaigned on was the idea of possibly making the TTC an essential service. Is that something that you support?
Well, I did vote for that motion in the past after the previous Wildcat strike, and I think many Torontonians believe it is an essential service. I think we do need to be able to maintain reliability and consistency of service if we're going to convince the rider to choose the TTC. So it's certainly something that I do support.
What about for the workers who would then lose their right to strike?
Well, what we've seen over the last couple of years is that the province has legislated the workers back to work when we've had either an illegal strike or a legal strike. So essentially, the province is looking at them as an essential service as well. And I think what we need to do is just formalize what is in practice already taking place.
But again, that takes the right of the workers to strike out of the picture. And so if you're looking at better customer service, don't you worry that if you move forward with something like that, that takes away that right, that there could be greater friction between the actual workers and the system itself?
Well, I believe, Matt, that really we're all working towards the same goal. We all want a safe workplace. We want good customer service. We want predictability and reliability. Certainly, I don't believe that workers want to be striking at the expense of predictability and at the expense of their own paycheck. That if we can negotiate a settlement that works for the workers, I believe that they will find that to be in their favor.
Spoke with the outgoing mayor, David Miller, last week, and one of the things that he pointed to as a great accomplishment in his time in office was Transit City. He said this would be a legacy that for 30 years we as a city haven't built any meaningful transit because we haven't had the will to do it. That we now actually have the will, there's this plan, the possibility of transit extending to areas that have never had reliable transit really is on our doorstep. Is Transit City something you support?
I've always supported the Metrolinx plan. And let me say that I do think that Mayor Miller should be congratulated for his commitment to transit and his ability to get money and funding for transit when, as he's acknowledged, we haven't had it in so many decades. I've always supported the Metrolinx plan.
There's a big but there, though.
Yeah, no, I think that he pushed Transit City at a time when there was no vision for transit. From the beginning and the inception of Transit City to where we are now, We've made many changes, and now we're operating from an overall regional plan, which is the Metrolinx plan.
But what about for the 416? Again, if you're looking at light rail into areas in the inner suburbs and the far reaches of the city, is that something that your TTC, if I can put it that way, would be supporting?
Well, we are right now in the process. We heard from the people. They've elected Rob Ford. Rob Ford had a different vision than David Miller
Subways.
For transit.
And that's really largely what it was. He said on this program several times that the people want subways.
And I think the people do want subways. And so I think now it is our obligation to go back and work with the province and Metrolinx to see how we can accommodate that goal.
Are you daunted by the task that's in front of you? That people rely on transit in a way that they don't rely on many other services that this city provides. And they take it very seriously. Are you concerned that this is a file that can be dealt with in a way that is going to make it better for everybody, or are there real hurdles that we have to deal with in the short term to actually look at trying to get transit rolling the way it should be?
Well, I agree with you entirely that transit is essential for so many people in our city, and we need to make sure that we continue to provide a reliable and consistent service to those who need it. And I think our challenge in front of us is that we need to build a system, not just for the current riders, but for the next generation. And I take that very seriously, and I'm very committed to improving transit to make sure that it remains something that we all can rely on and are proud of.
Good luck.
Thank you.
That's Karen Stintz, the incoming chair of the TTC. What is the role of the private sector in shaping the society that we want to live in? This is the question that is really at the heart of a new report prepared by the Canadian Task Force on Social Finance, private capital and the business sector, and their involvement in building the city and the country that we want. To tell us about the role of social finance, we spoke with Ilse Chernik this morning. She is the CEO of the Mars Discovery District and the task force chair. What is the role of social finance? Can you just basically explain actually what it is first, I suppose, and how it plays that role in our society?
Certainly. Social finance is sometimes also referred to as impact investing or blended value investing. And it is about investing money in businesses or organizations or specialized funds that generate a financial return, but also at the same time generate either a social or environmental return.
And so the task force recommends what in terms of moving forward with a broader approach to social finance?
Well, the task force set out to do sort of two important things. First, to look at what's happening in the rapidly growing impact investing marketplace globally, and also to look at best practices that are already functioning across Canada so that we can draw on those experiences. But then to use that to really create a set of evidence-based recommendations that fall in three categories. The first is in mobilizing capital, so that is about unlocking new sources of capital from foundation endowments, institutional investors, et cetera, for social good. Secondly, to enable a more positive tax and regulatory environment, which will make it easier or at least less onerous for charities and nonprofits to start enterprises that can generate revenue. And finally, to make sure that we provide social entrepreneurs and enterprising nonprofits with business support so that they can be successful in launching innovative new initiatives and obviously growing and scaling those to be successful.
Give us an example of something like that that's already happening here in Toronto.
Oh, there's lots of good examples. One that I know Torontonians are somewhat familiar with is the work of Social Capital Partners led by Bill Young, where he has over the last decade invested in, using his own private foundation funds, social enterprises that range all the way from property management companies to thrift stores, turnaround couriers here in Toronto being an example, helping them to grow and become profitable while employing people who face employment barriers.
And this is what he calls the triple bottom line.
That is correct. The triple bottom line typically refers to those enterprises where there is also a layer of environmental benefit in combination with social benefit.
It's interesting because that sounds like a great initiative, and someone like Bill Young is very eloquent in explaining why he's doing this, in part because it makes money, but also because it benefits society. If you're an investor, your job is really just to try and make money. Why should investors try and extend that bottom line beyond just the fiscal return to look at a broader social return?
I think there is recognition both here and abroad that governments are going to be fiscally constrained for some years to come, and that we need to mobilize private capital to work adjacent to philanthropic and government capital to address growing social needs and also the growing challenge we have as custodians of the environment. So that's sort of the macro picture, and we've seen that trend certainly building, but it has been rapidly accelerating post the meltdown of 2008. I think we are also really seeing the emergence of a new class of investors where a purely financial return is no longer good enough. And those impact investors want to see their capital put to work in a way that will generate a financial return, but also will make a positive contribution to society. And, that ranges from individual investors two foundations looking to enhance their impact by leveraging more of their endowment assets in mission-related activities. And then at the same time, we see on the demand side of the equation a very strong and growing cohort of innovative social enterprises. And the probably number one challenge that they have is access to capital, because they fall between the traditional processes of grant making to grow and traditional investment vehicles.
Do you have to sell it, though, as more than just altruism, more than a business person actually helping the community that they live in, and actually sell it as a good financial investment as well?
Absolutely, and I think this is, you know, this is the power, really, of the blended value approach, is that it is not about simply diminishing a pool of capital. It is about putting the positive force of enterprise to work to grow both the pool of capital as well as the impact.
So what has to happen for this to go forward?
Well, it's one of these unique areas where we really need to see a new partnership between the public, private, and community sector emerge. And the recommendations of the task force really span this landscape, because we believe to build a sustainable and healthy, robust marketplace, we need to look at, you know, all of the different aspects that are required to get us there.
Are you confident that people will embrace this? Again, people are often concerned about what they lose when there's that public-private partnership, specifically when you're talking about services that and issues that have long been dealt with by the state, if I can put it that way.
I think that is a legitimate concern. This is an initiative that will initially be relatively small but grow. Mm. I think the most encouraging thing about this work of the task force has been the unbelievable interest it has generated across the country from all the major stakeholders, ranging from all levels of government, all types of investors, and the community sector. So I see this as a very significant opportunity for Canada, and I think the community is ready to get to work.
It's exciting work. Ilse, good to talk to you as always. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt.
That's Ilse Chernicht, the CEO of the Mars Discovery District. Really interesting to hear about the work that's being done here. There's a lot already going on in Toronto, and more to come should this task force get its way. Well, today there's an event designed to make building connections a little easier. It's called Speed Mentoring, and it works very much in the same way that speed dating does. Skilled newcomers will mingle with professionals in their field for 10 minutes at a time, and hopefully something interesting will come out of that. Tonight's event is happening at the Toronto Board of Trade, and I'm joined in studio now by two people who will be attending for very different reasons. Lynn Roger is a Senior Vice President of Human Resources for BMO Financial Group, and Navita Singh came to Toronto from Dubai more than 5 months ago. She's currently looking for work in the human resources field. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you get out of events like this, Lynn, in terms of being a mentor? What do you for you, what's the value there?
The value for me is giving back. I've been working for 31 years. I've been in management positions since I'm 17 years old. And I think that the experiences that I've learned along the way are maybe helpful for others that are trying to find opportunities in large corporations like the bank that I work in.
Navita?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your job search. You've been here, as I mentioned, just over 6 months.
Yes.
How's the hunt for work going?
It's going on smooth. I won't say it's been successful so far, but I've been having almost 16 years of experience, where more than 7-8 years has been in senior managerial positions and all. Going back all the way down, getting into an entry-level position is quite challenging. So that's where is one challenge. And second is obviously I'm not getting the kind of break I would be looking for.
Now, the two of you have never met.
No.
You're both going to be at this evening's event.
Right. Yes.
So we're going to put 4 minutes on our clock. I have a little bell here, and we're just going to pretend that this is a short mentoring session, and hopefully you can get something out of it, and you can get something out of it, and there will be an exchange of information, all right?
Absolutely.
Are we ready?
So, Navita, I'm really glad to meet with you today. I understand that you came to Canada, into Ontario, specifically 6 months ago.
Right.
I believe that you're interested in the field of human resources. So if you can talk to me a little bit about your experience in Dubai,
right,
and then I can find out, you know, more about you and how I can help you along your way.
Right. Thanks, Lynn, for this opportunity. Basically, my background has been that I've worked in Dubai for more than 11 years. And my last assignment, where I was heading the human resources department of a group of companies where we had 15 various companies under its umbrella, Two of the businesses were in financial sector. Now, I'll just emphasize on financial sector experience because considering that that you would be able to guide me more into that field.
Right.
That is, I was working for international exchange business, which was Al Usman International Exchange Business. And second, I was also associated with financial trading business, which was an international trading of financial services, brokerage and other things.
Okay.
So that's what about from the financial background. But I have been experienced into a retail segment, into service, customer service, then into automobile segment, construction, real estate. So all those 15 companies, very closely work with them, all that experience I have. Now, that's the kind of experience I would like to utilize in this country again.
Right. And so talk to me a little bit about the strategy that you adopted to try to find work in Canada in human resources. What have you done so far?
I have attended this HR Connections program through Access Employment,
okay.
which was like to know about employment laws, because being in HR, that was the foremost important thing for me to know was different. So compared to UAE laws and regulations, Canadian laws and regulations are very, very,
very different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so that was my first effort before I even went into the job search.
Okay.
That was the employment law to study what's the health and safety, what's industrial relations and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Studied that for 5 weeks. Went into an intensive program. Then I have started making the resumes as for this market, which everyone
right.
told me.
Right.
So I would like to hear from you, like, you know, what's the best strategy? How can I, what's the trick to get into this market?
Okay, so one of the things that I would suggest that you not do is downplay the experience that you don't have, right? And so, you know, some individuals will look at your resume and say, you don't have Canadian experience. So you have to downplay that, and you have to talk about the type of work as right. opposed to where you did that work, right? And
okay.
so in human resources, the kind of challenges that you faced and how you overcame them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's really important in individuals that we're looking at where I work at BMO Financial Group is how an individual got the accomplishments, achieved the accomplishments that they did. So when you look at your resume, one of the things that I would ask you to really consider is not just have a list of tasks. You know, I did this and I was responsible for this. What's important for someone looking at your resume mm-hmm. is what are the results
okay.
that came from the activities or the responsibilities that you had. Mm-hmm. When you go into an interview, it's really important that you're prepared. And so much of the interviews that are done in Canada in large corporations are behavioral-focused interviews.
Okay.
And really what the person is looking for is understanding your accomplishments, right? And so when you look at your resume, take a look at your resume when we finish this event today
yeah.
and ask yourself the question, if I didn't know Navita, mm-hmm. could I actually tell what she's done, or do I have a list of the tasks that she had?
Okay.
Because how you accomplish those things is really, really important, right? Do you work with teams?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's a strength that you have, then that has to come out because you have to make your experience jump off the page because, you know, large employers receive thousands of resumes.
Right.
Another thing that you should do is work on your networks. So meet as many people as you can. And you, no matter what opportunity you're in, you could be at the grocery store, right, and interact with someone. When you interact with different people, you start making connections, and they may have insights into jobs that are not even posted on career sites, et cetera.
All right. Okay.
It's just over 4 minutes.
Wow.
Time flies.
Wow, time does fly.
When you're making connections.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. great.
Navita, that's the first time you've done something like
yes.
that. Was it helpful?
It was, indeed, because everyone has been talking, at least in Canadian market, everyone has been talking how to make a resume or how to prepare a resume. But generally, people have never mentioned that tasks is what should be emphasized. They've always been saying 2 pages or 1 page or it should
right.
be brief and everything. Because my earlier resume was almost 4 pages,
mm-hmm.
you know, having 16 years experience in different markets and working all together it's very detailed. I actually need to go back and now look at my resume, whether it talks about tasks or it talks about the normal thing which I've been doing, the responsibilities basically which I handle. There's a difference between the two.
Lynn, do you think that we're getting better at dealing with that question of experience, of where people have their experience, we as a society, especially like in a city like Toronto?
I think we're getting better. I think the progress of that is not as fast as I'd like it to be. And it's interesting because the world is getting really complex. Mm-hmm. And different perspectives, mm-hmm. different cultures, and nuances of different cultures is what are going to make companies stand out. And I think those that will early adopt that will be the benefactors of that. I think the reality is managers have a great deal of pressure, and they need to perform right away. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's, you know, the training that they will have to take, the time that it will take away from taking someone that they have less training to do. But on the flip side, I think that we have to educate managers in terms of the experience that they do bring, and that the training on the technical side is probably a lot easier to do than all the wealth of experience that the individual candidates bring. And so I think that's our work.
That's a really interesting point. And the work that you're doing, both of you, I think really helps that along.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good luck. Can you let us know when things work out for you and you get a job?
Definitely. I'll report back to you if at all anything comes good.
I'm sure it'll be sooner rather than later. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Lynn Roger is a senior VP of human resources for BMO Financial. Navita Singh came to Toronto from Dubai more than 6 months ago, currently looking for work in the human resources field. And as I mentioned, we'll let you know when she gets a job in that field. That's your podcast for Tuesday. If you hear anything that you'd like to comment on, any number of ways to do that. Our website, cbc.ca/metromorning. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/metromorning. And we're on Twitter as well, @metromorning. My name is Matt Galloway. Back tomorrow. Have yourself a wonderful day.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.